I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Hey, why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
You're listening to Talking Biotech, a weekly podcast illuminating issues in agricultural and medical biotechnology. Your questions and concerns are addressed here using a science-based approach with the goal of driving discovery to application with communication. Now here's your host, Dr. Kevin Folta.
Yeah, and as it said, now for something completely different. This week will be a little bit of a departure from my normal podcast where I have on guests, and I do get to interview probably my least favorite guest in the world, and that would be me. However, I think with the recent turn of events and all of the things happening, it's really important for me to clarify what's happening in my universe in order to be able to effectively be able to continue this particular podcast. It's important part of the communication plan and part of my desire to communicate science, and this is an outstanding forum for that, and I do appreciate your listening. And the wonderful comments have been really wonderful, especially at a very trying time. Next week, we'll talk about citrus, I believe, and the next week, so citrus greening and the disease suppression efforts, both through biotechnology and traditional breeding. And then the next week, we'll talk about tomatoes and the domestication of tomatoes, tomato breeding, and then follow that up with some really nice biotech information on tomatoes. So what's the deal with today? So today, we really have to focus on what's happening regarding the FOIA issue and the contribution that Monsanto company made to my outreach program, and talk about where this is going and what's happening next, because it's really quite an interesting scenario. I mean, it's amazing to see what's happening on all fronts, and we'll talk about that later. But it really started with a phone call the other day from my father, and my dad calls me on a Friday, and I know something isn't quite right. It either means that somebody died, or he bought something at a yard sale and needs a pickup truck to move it. My dad and I talk, you know, all the time, but usually on Sunday. And so Friday phone call's a little strange. And it turns out that he found something online on a Facebook page that showed me being branded as a liar for the Monsanto company, and that I had received $25,000. And to my dad, this is a flag, because his Father's Day present this year kind of sucked, and he was kind of curious, what's the deal? You know, you get this $25,000 check, you know, a little something for, you know, a little something for dad. and, you know, thought he'd wet his beak a little bit. That's good. You know, maybe, send him to Canada to fish for a while or something. That's great. So this goes down, and he was really taken back by the comment section and just the aggressive anger, the mob mentality that was there. This was on one of the web pages, I think Food Democracy Now! Or GMO Insight, and was really upset with the idea. You know, he was concerned for my safety. He said, you know, what's going on with this? What's wrong with these people? I mean, you're talking about science. And my father and I don't usually talk much about the science or the outreach. My time with him is, you know, usually pretty limited, and so we tend to talk about more what's happening personally, you know, that kind of thing. We don't really dwell much on the science, and certainly not my escapades into the world of defending science. So that was really the first salvo here that really got me concerned. And really, it starts really 15 years ago. And 15 years ago, when I was a postdoc in Madison, Wisconsin, I gave a presentation at a local Whole Foods organic co-op on transgenic technology, because they really were missing the point with a lot of their in-store rhetoric, and I shopped there. So it was really important for me that they understood. and was happy to do that. I thought it was really and they were happy I did it. And we sat together and learned and talked about this. And over the next few years, I would maybe once or twice a year get to do a discussion with a public group about the strengths and limitations, the risks and benefits of transgenic technology or this GMO thing. And over the last couple of years, it's really been picking up steam, and with the assistance of the internet has allowed me many venues to be able to discuss the science of this technology with people who are just concerned. And who wouldn't be? I mean, when you read the internet and all of the scare that's out there and all of the angry rhetoric and the harshness and the fear, you know, your children will have autism, you'll get arthritis and diabetes and all this stuff they're blaming on a kind of food, but there's no evidence to support that. And so I like to be the broker of the science. Let's talk about the technology, what it is and what it isn't. The problem is that when you discuss a technology that has performed reasonably well over 18 years without any evidence of harm, then that isn't consistent with what the activists need to tell you. And therefore, the scientist has to go down. So last year, I guess it was July, I met a Monsanto employee at the Florida Molecular Biology Workshop. And this is an annual workshop we do for our students at University of Florida that's open to other universities as well. And students present their research and talk about what they're doing. It's all in genomics, molecular biology. And we usually have someone from an academic who comes in and talks about their research. This is a special guest, but also someone from industry, because many of our students find good careers in industry. So this was a case for someone from Monsanto to join this this workshop. And he was really impressed with our students, and he was a nice guy. He and I exchanged emails for a long time, and he suggested that maybe the company would support some kind of workshop for students, because they're expensive to put on, but they're very valuable in training scientists. And certainly the companies do benefit from a better, more trained, highly qualified workforce. So I thought that was really cool and was excited to pursue that. And I also really indicated, you know, here's what I'm doing, is I'm going out and doing these teach the teacher types of events where I talk to scientists about how to talk about science. And that's a really valuable exercise. And he said, oh, well, we should talk about this. Maybe there's a way that this kind of stuff could be funded. And really, I mentioned that, you know, it cost me about $1,000 for a campus visit, and that usually that covers a venue, which sometimes you have to rent, paying for my plane ticket, which I always keep cheap, a night in a hotel, renting the facility. Sometimes you got to rent a projector that costs $100. So all of these costs are very expensive, and I would sometimes even do this with non-university groups, and that was cool. Like, I would pay out of pocket to go see the screening of GMO OMG, because the group that was showing it thought it would be good to have a scientist in the room. And that was really a nice experience with a predominantly anti-GMO audience, and I was very grateful for that invitation, because I think it changed some minds. So how do I normally support this? Well, I do it out of pocket, sort of. Maybe not directly, but here's how it usually works, is that I'm frequently asked to come give talks at a campus, or sometimes at companies, sometimes for national organizations, sometimes for growers groups. And they always ask, because everybody, you know, people do charge to give talks. If you're a high in demand speaker, which I guess I'm not, but I'm in demand, obviously, because someone is trying to get me there. They ask, well, what does it cost for you to come give a talk? And I always say, cover my modest expenses, you know, cheap hotel room, red eye ticket. And then if you don't mind putting some money into my outreach program instead of paying me a honorarium, I'd really appreciate that. And I'm not going to tell you what that is, but it's whatever you usually find customary to bring in an outside speaker. And I've in the past have received anywhere between $500 and $5,000. And if you could just make a contribution to that program, that would be wonderful. And you write a check to University of Florida, put a letter in there saying this is going to Kevin Folta's outreach program. They put it in the right place. Done. That's how I've supported this over the years. So when, and I should mention that this would have been tens of thousands of dollars that I have not put into my pocket that went to supporting an outreach program. Because I really feel that's an appropriate way to grow this, that you do a good job talking about science, and it allows you to do more jobs talking about science, and maybe build a nice fund that can allow to cover the costs of this type of event. So when the Monsanto company said, well, we can cover the costs of this kind of thing and do the student conference, we can do that. Tell us about what it's going to cost, and we'll support that. And I thought, this is great. I mean, this would really allow me to do a lot more of this kind of outreach. And the actual original plan was, well, this will cover a big conference, which is expensive because bringing in outside speakers is quite expensive, and their accommodations. Bringing in outside speakers, have a conference, and then do about one of these a month. Train the trainers, teach scientists about science communication once a month. And it allowed me to do a website and other things, which I thought was really helpful. This would be great. And so they were to submit a payment to the University of Florida, which would go into an account that would administer the costs of my travel and the cost of delivery of this outreach program. And the original idea was, I think I would make thumb drives with information and presentations and things, but it just was cheaper to do it by direct download. So the original idea just changed a lot, and the money went much farther. So this was all really good. And it was funny because when I was in my office and the original check came to the university, it actually came to my office with my name on it. It said, pay to the order of Kevin Folta. And I did that hot potato thing where you go, wah, because it really wasn't to me. And I thought how hilarious it would be if a picture of that check ended up somewhere online. That one we'd still be talking about. So I had to do the awkward job of contacting a company that just sent a large check and say, hey, this can't go to me, this goes to the university, and is that okay, can you do it, and of course they had to reissue it, and it was a really kind of an embarrassing pain to have to do, because that's just the way it works. The money goes to University of Florida. They establish an account to administer the costs of my outreach and the allowable costs. I mean, I have rules I have to play within. I can't do certain stuff with it. I can only charge certain amounts, certain things, that kind of deal. I even have like a very restricted per diem for what I could charge meals, which I never do. I feel that I want to stretch this account. I would eat anyway. So, I go to Subway and grab half a sandwich, and that's, pretty cheap. So I could do that out of pocket. I need these funds to last a long time, and was very, very grateful that they were choosing to support this outreach program. That really is important to me. That's just kind of the funny story on the front end of that. I was really excited to book lots of dates and start to think about this ahead of time. And this is actually the August of 2014. This is 1 year ago only. So everything I've done before that is well documented. Those presentations are online. They're all available. And you can see that there's nothing about a check coming in the mail that changed the message from one thing to something else. The message has always been consistent. It's what does the science say? And that's something I feel very strong about. So I was really excited that as time went on, I was getting a lot of opportunities to talk about science, not just about transgenic science communication, GMO stuff, but also about the research in my lab. We're doing some really edgy stuff that's really cool, and people were really interested in that. So I've been getting a lot of opportunities to talk out of town at least once a week. I think in 2015, I've spent 50% of my nights at home. And so I was able to use these funds to maybe add a day to a trip I was already taking. And that when I was in at Arizona State University for a different meeting, I was able to add on one extra night in a hotel and the cost of, in that case, it was Jimmy John subs and a couple boxes of coffee and a flat of water, so that students and postdocs and faculty could come to the workshop and learn how to talk about the science of biotechnology. And it was really a great day, great students, and we had a wonderful time. So, but I was able to just really stretch this money, and I think that out of the entire account, I've spent a total of maybe $9,000 to $11,000 total in all of my outreach efforts over these years, and that either I have paid for or that were paid for through that Monsanto allocation. And so there still was significant funding left, certainly, you know, funds that I could do a lot more going forward. So we turn ahead to, let's say, well, it was July 30th this year, a couple weeks ago. And I find out that my university had turned over all of my email to U.S. Right to Know. I was, no problem. That's what we're supposed to do. We were compliant with the submission. No big deal. And I was discussing the content with a reporter from Nature about what some of the hotspots might be. What are the things that people will grasp onto and question? And certainly the discussion of the $25,000 allocation, which was there in the emails, that if it was going to be top secret, I could have picked up a phone and done it that way. This was all part of the public record. No big deal. Plus, you know, email is the only way I communicate anything, and everybody knows that. They'll say, well, I sent you a text. I say, yeah, but I didn't look at my phone. Email, phone, email's the best by far, and rarely do I discuss anything else any other way. I have limited bandwidth, my brain is full, and I need to have all the stuff in one place, and that's the way I roll. So I discussed this with the reporter from Nature. 25K got mentioned in the article, and that's when it hit. When you're a scientist who's out speaking about science and teaching scientists how to speak about science and making science understandable for the public, you're working against the interests of U.S. Right to Know. You're working against the interests of an anti-GMO movement. And they need to stop you. The best thing they can do is tie you to Monsanto, because Monsanto has acquired kind of an undeserved negative reputation, which when you look online, let's just say that the accusations, suing farmers, killing farmers in India, blah, 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 poisoning everybody, this is all BS. And they don't like that I can talk about that. But anyway, so if you can tie me to Monsanto and discredit me as a scientist by saying, look, he got money from them and he's talking about science, therefore, he must be just talking about the science that they control. And of course, as I said before, my science has never changed. My discussion of science has never changed before or after that check came in the mail. But still online, I'm called a liar, a scammer, a thief, shill, whore, Nazi. I've seen it all in the last several weeks. And it's been really disappointing to watch. And some people say, disengage from it, you know, go do something else. And I did. I went on vacation in Yellowstone for the first time in 12 years that I went on a vacation, specifically for a vacation. It wasn't just adding a day to an end of a conference or something. So that was pretty cool. It wasn't always plugged in. It was very helpful. But anyway, I've taken all this heat for this. And I've also taken heat for being reimbursed for travel, meaning that if I traveled to talk to farmers because a company asked me to do it, or I traveled to a company to be on a panel because they wanted a scientist as well as somebody else or whatever, they would cover my costs, which is cool. That's how it should be. It's customary. It's no big deal. If I go there, someone's got to pay for me to go there. I'm not paying for me to go there for your company, and my university shouldn't have to pay for it, and the state isn't going to pay for it. Who should pay for me to go to your company and talk to your people? The company should. I mean, I don't understand why people have a problem with this. And certainly, if I did pay from university funds to go to Bayer to be on a panel, people would be screaming about that too. So, anyway, I'm being reimbursed for travel. You know, as I mentioned before, it's always last class, you know, red eye, usually an exit row, you know, modest hotel room always, never any meals, that whole thing. I keep my costs low, and I'm always respectful, even with a company that's got deep pockets. I don't feel it's appropriate for me to charge them, you know, a lot just because I can. You know, it's somebody else's money, and I respect that with everybody. And now I'm really being castigated for receiving those reimbursements. And this is what's hysterical, is that people like Vandana Shiva can be paid tens of thousands of dollars personally from a university. They get first-class accommodations. And they come to campus and they spread misinformation. And it harms the farmers, and it really hurts those who are economically challenged. Whether you're talking about disadvantaged students or food insecure people who are right on the edge, and she's telling them that their food is poison, that they have to buy certain kinds of food produced in certain ways, or, you know, spreading her message, she can do that, and no one asks for her records. And that's what shows you what this really is. This is about how to destroy Kevin Folta, how to discredit him, and how to make it look like I'm in somebody's back pocket, and I'm volunteering my time. I'm keeping my costs low. I'm transparent with my funding. I tell the truth about science. And that's exactly why they want me to stop. So the abuse continues. And during at this point, I'm already, you know, weathering this very well. I'm, you know, I think that people kind of don't care. But when you start to look at things like, you know, like my father who looked at GMO free inside and GMO inside and GMO free USA food democracy now, just with all the hate, I went there and I said, hey, it's Kevin. You know, I'm the guy you're talking about. I'm the guy you said should be hanging from a tree. You know, I'm the guy who should be tried for crimes against humanity. What can I do for you? Can I answer your questions? Or I would say, here's, you know, you stated this, here's what the reality is, here's my email, contact me if you have questions. And I spent a whole night just answering questions of people who were really angry and hateful. And those websites took my comments off and blocked me from commenting. So I wasn't even allowed to defend myself. I wasn't even allowed to respond to the anger. And that was where I really started to see the worm turning here, because it isn't about the truth. It's about winning for your cause, even if it is at the expense of a truth and at the expense of the reputation of a scientist who just wants to teach people about science. Well, then the PLOS fiasco. That Charles Seif and Paul Thacker published a blatant misrepresentation of an email that they obtained from U.S. Right to Know. Now, first of all, why are two authors getting this information from U.S. Right to Know, who waited 6 months to get it, and I'm sure are manufacturing their own smear campaign? How did this pair of authors, unless they had some sort of agenda, how are they able to wrestle this away from the people that held those emails? So right away, you gotta wonder what the heck is going on here. Well, anyway, they publish their interpretation of an email, and here a journalism professor from New York University does not call me to ask, what does this mean? A blatant misrepresentation, a libelous attack, saying that I wrote an email that said confidential coalition action, in the subject line, and that I was advising the upper echelons of Monsanto Company about how to overthrow and defeat Proposition 37 in California. I saw that and I read it. I thought, how the hell did that happen? And worst thing is, the vice president of my university circulated this to everybody in our university. I mean, I look like a real ass in this thing. Really? Me being advising Monsanto on how to defeat California? What the heck is that about? So I asked Charles Seif, one of the authors, I said, could you please email me the email that you used to obtain this? And he was a very nice guy. I had no problem with him personally. He was actually very reasonable. He sent me a copy of the email, and I could not believe my eyes. What the email actually was something that went from the No on 105 coalition to a person in Monsanto who then sent it to me because she was inviting me to come to a dinner. They invited me to come to a dinner to talk to farmers about genetic engineering and about labeling and answer their questions. That's totally cool. Glad to do that. I was very disappointed, and I told her this in the email, that really this should not be about fear-based campaigns, because both the pro and the anti-GMO people in these campaigns have constructed these elaborate, well, if you eat this, your children will have autism, and you will get cancer, and you'll get wrinkly and weird-looking. You know, I mean, this is what they were saying. On the other side, anti-labeling people were saying, your food costs will cost to go through the roof and you won't be able to feed your kids and then they'll dry up and die. Both sides were using extreme rhetoric that was fear-based and nobody was bringing the science. And whether it was science or if you had evidence of costs, saying according to this study we saw this, or the extra infrastructure that would be needed, the factual accounts, that's what I was telling them. That this shouldn't be about fear, it should be about facts. That was my message. And that was to Colorado farmers in the 105 campaign in September of 2014. This is 1 year, or last 2 years, after the Prop 37 thing in California took place. So why would Seif and Thacker say that it was about me working with Monsanto to defeat the California proposition? Well, to me, I can imagine no more contentious and hot-button issue than to get everybody really upset with me than to say that I overthrew, that I was a, strategist in helping the company overthrow Prop 37. I mean, even though it was 2 years before the email was written, details don't really matter. They even got the state wrong. So PLOS refused to give me a spot to rebut this, so I did it on Science 2.0. And later they would agree that they should offer me space, and that was very nice of them. But it was only if I could elevate the debate. Now, I don't know about how to elevate the debate that the authors didn't check before they wrote, and they made mistakes. They said the Earth goes around the sun, and I have no way to debate that. I mean, I'm not going to debate false information. What do you do? So, I did said my piece over there. Luckily, my colleagues throughout the university system responded to PLOS vigorously. One friend was actually approached to be an editor at one of the PLOS journals, and she said as part of the reason she's going to decline is because of the way they treated me. So luckily, the other night, PLOS retracted the Seif and Thacker smear piece. And of course, Seif and Thacker put it in LA Times that I accepted travel reimbursement from Monsanto. And just rubbing it in when they don't mention, of course, that it's customary and that's the way it works. Anyway, the bottom line is that, there was $25,000 that came to the university to expand and facilitate my science communication program. None of this went to me personally. I've done nothing wrong. I've not changed a thing when the funds came or when, and I won't change it when they're gone. That said, it's my job as a public scientist. I'm supposed to be integrated with industry, with farmers, with community, with other researchers. I'm supposed to be working with companies, and they're supposed to be making sure that they are covering the costs of that interaction. So I'm doing my job. A company makes it possible for me to do more of it. And all of this hits the fan. I'm being misrepresented in PLOS and being mischaracterized everywhere online. And then the ads on Craigslist were particularly disturbing because here this is happening in Gainesville, where I live. Where in the Gainesville's Craigslist, my address shows up. And I guess my address was also posted in Food Democracy Now! On their Facebook page. My salary has been uncovered by famous veterinarian in California. She put that all over the web before. Someone else, this other guy, did as well recently. This person who just started a new Twitter account last week is freely showing information about me like this. So when my address, location of my lab, salary, comments about my family, one Craigslist posting in the Gainesville Craigslist talks about my my deceased mother, who today's her birthday. But you know, they're really, these people are scum, and this is where this is going. You know, getting the veiled personal threats, just mean things being said on Twitter, things about, you know, that you know, wait till we come poison your family. You know, I'm getting emails like this. I mean, just like hate, and people who I don't understand why they would. Anyway, I do understand. I know exactly why. And the thing is that with any of these people, I would be so happy to take them on toe to toe. I mean, you want to debate? We'll go debate. We'll do it in any forum you want. We'll do it on Google Hangouts. We'll do it at your coffee house. You name it. You can come at me with an argument. You can come at me with a baseball bat, and that's just fine. But when you start talking about the safety of my family, you start talking about the safety of my home, safety of my students, safety of my lab, where we don't do GMO research, where we're working with non-chemical methods of making food last longer so people will have more food. I can't afford to have that compromised. I can't have somebody destroy my lab or destroy 10 years of good work. That's where this is going. When people are trying to foment local anger against me and against my family or whatever, when you're reading in the Facebook comments of "kill the son of a bitch," you know, he should be executed with the rest of the Monsanto criminals. Probably the worst thing that I see, and I see it over and over again from Nassim Taleb, distinguished professor Nassim Taleb, that Folta was paid to lie. The veterinarian in California, Ina Valikoff, who says Folta was paid to lie. That stuff is particularly damaging or particularly sad because nobody buys my words. Nobody ever has and nobody ever will. And maybe it's people who would say such things that say them. Because being paid to lie may be part of what they're about. But to me, it makes no sense. It's not the way that I roll, and it's just, it'll never happen that way. I can do something and do a really positive outreach science communication activity that's really a good thing. And changing the way scientists talk to the public, which is something we haven't done well. And we're making good progress. And that does not change if you decide to throw money at it to help me do it more. The Monsanto company did the right thing. They provided funds to help me talk to more people and to expand the sharing of science. And you can hate them all you want. That's great. But don't hate the fact that they supported a public scientist to talk about science. I mean, if anything, give them a gold star for once. So let's get down to the brass tacks of why we're here today. So where is this going? So, you know, I can take the insults, and I can take, you know, the Twitter information and the BS on lousy websites that are basically echo chambers for the scientifically illiterate. That's fine. But now that we're talking about threats, now that we're talking about endangering others, it's really, I think we have to change gears. And the university has suggested that they give the funds back and defund the outreach program. And at first, I really was not happy with that idea because it takes away, because the company did the right thing, I did the right thing, we are doing the right thing by standing up for science. But they're right. I mean, really, this is the best way that we should be using company money. A no-strings-attached account that the university can use to administer the costs of an outreach program. What better way to be able to use university money? It's not, I mean, corporate money. That now goes back to the company. You know, really, this is what we need more of. And I'm not, I won't apologize for that. I'm grateful that that the company recognized the value of my outreach program and invested the funds to enhance the understanding of science and more science communication. I did nothing wrong, and all of this FOIA business and all these emails will show I did nothing wrong. I only wanted to teach science communication to scientists. But I'm going to agree to giving the funds back. It's about student safety. It's about family safety. It's about very certain concerns about vandalism to my home or lab. You know, that's where we're at. And I'll say it, the terrorists have won. The terrorists have won. So how do we take a little bit of this back? So as I said, that you know, I had funds from other sources. It wasn't just the Monsanto company. So that account had some money in it from other places. And since then, since this fallout, people have sent checks. They've sent other funds, personal as well as from companies. Really sweet. In the mornings, I just want to quit. That shows up and it just changes things. The account is still at a deficit, and our senior vice president for agriculture and natural resources is Dr. Jack Payne, and he agreed to help me cover the costs if I needed it. And I told him that that's great, I appreciate it, but let's not go there just yet. Going forward, I'm not going to quit doing this program. Dr. Payne has agreed to cover the costs, and I'll do it personally too. You know, we can't let this stop it. I've got some good things on the schedule in the next few months that have very nice honoraria associated with them that will not go to me personally, but will go into this program. It's probably about $10,000 that will go into this outreach account from money that could have just gone to me that goes to this. So, you know, I guess the kind of punchline is that if you have, if your company would like to support this, go to talkingbiotech.com and hit the support this tab. And again, the podcast is entirely funded by me. That's fine. I know that's still $50 a month, but I'll cover that. But the Talking Biotech Outreach Program could use additional assistance, and it will all be exactly posted on the website, so if you don't want to be associated with this, don't send any money, because I have no choice but to be over-the-top transparent. That's how that has to go. So, the program will go on, and we will return the funds to Monsanto. The big problem is, in trying to orchestrate the beginning of this, it is unsure how you give money back to a company. So we're in uncharted waters here, because we have no idea, and I don't think they have an idea of how you give them money back. All right. So let's put a lid on this. Three final points. So to me, what this does is it shows the danger of this abuse of the FOIA system, that here, a contribution to a science communication program was the blood in the water that activists needed to defame me, paint my words as being painting me as being owned by Monsanto, that my words are all bought, that I'm a liar and all this stuff. That is what they needed to do that. And the problem is that it shows you that in the future, anybody who saw what happened to me would find ways to pick up a phone and orchestrate these things through some sort of hidden account or start, or at my university told me, well, you could start a nonprofit and then anything that comes in is completely shielded, just like U.S. Right to Know. But that isn't what I want to do. This is a university event and the university activity that needs to go through the university and needs to be transparent, and that's fine. The problem is the abuse. And it's the gotchas. And it's the people who want to hang me because I'm teaching science, now coming up with a connection that they can use to paint me as something that I'm not. This whole thing also shows you the hate of the anti-GMO movement and GMO Inside, GMO Free USA. This isn't about the truth. This is about harming those that tell the truth. This is about increasing your contributions, increasing your market share, increasing your visibility, increasing maybe their paycheck at the expense of fairness, at the expense of science, and at the expense of facts. It also shows us the hypocrisy of journalists. They're screaming foul that I didn't put Monsanto's funds on the side of the Goodyear blimp and fly it across the country. All of this was public information. It was always there when I did the presentation. People could ask and say, who pays for this? And I could say, here are the 20 companies that contribute. No problem. They tell me that I'm not transparent, but they don't care how the anti-GMO, I'll say liars, are funded. They don't ask questions about them. So going forward, here's my challenge. If you want transparency, then let's put all of our cards on the table. Me first. If they want all my receipts for everything I've done, then I also want those same journalists to request them from Vandana Shiva, from Smith, from Senef, from all the people who've done these things, talking about the dangers of transgenic crop technology. How much are they paid to create media? How much are they pocketing? How much are their plane tickets? And they'll hide behind, well, those aren't public officials like you. You're a public scientist. So that's right. But if this is about transparency, why does it matter who I work for? Let's put all our cards on the table. Now, I'm perfectly fine with this. I'll produce every single document because I've been taking a libelous beating of social media and from what we thought were very respected authors. I'll put it all on the table. Now, can we have, please, some of these other folks who are out there saying that, calling me on corruption and calling me on being opaque? Could you please at least be fair enough to request that other people do the same? I bet you never will. So the goal of the science is to get to the truth. And sometimes you can do it the easy way, sometimes you can do it the hard way, but we look at evidence and we make good decisions. And I've always spoken to others from a platform of evidence, and I say, here's what the evidence says, here's what the research says. That's where I come from when I talk about these topics with audiences. And I think it's for those reasons that they need me to stop. Because we are changing hearts and minds by connecting people with the excitement of biotechnology, the good things that we can do. This isn't Monsanto's technology. This is our technology. And we can use this to make vitamin A-enriched bananas for the people in Uganda who are going blind from the lack of a micronutrient. We can use this to have higher protein food sources, such as fish that can grow faster in captivity, so we don't deplete natural resources, and that we can have better, higher quality protein for kids earlier in life so that they can have enhanced brain activity and brain development. And then have the healthy oils for people in my age bracket who need that, those fish oils for healthy hearts. I mean, this is we can have more of this. We can repopulate the Appalachians with trees that grew there until humans screwed it up and brought in pathogens that destroyed them. We can do a lot of good things with biotechnology, and that's the whole idea of the Talking Biotechnology podcast. Talking Biotech podcast. We can do good things with this technology, and that's where we have to focus. And I'm going to keep teaching that. I do have to say thank you to, and excuse me if I get a little bit weird here. I'm really grateful for all the support that people have given me over the last couple weeks. The kind words from complete strangers. The emails, hundreds of them. The things on Twitter, the things on Facebook, the things everywhere from complete strangers who just say, thank you for doing what you're doing and we're sorry you have to go through this. It's been really sweet, and I really appreciate it, and it means a lot right now. But you got a commitment from me. You know, this isn't my job. This isn't what I do. I'm a researcher, and I've got students to take care of and postdocs to assist, and a really great new technology coming out of my lab that you'll be amazed with. All these things are really good. But I have to do that first, and I work in a great department with wonderful, wonderful faculty and the smartest, best people in the world who I'm surrounded with every day, and truly I'm very fortunate to be in that position. Talking to the public about science is really something I do as a hobby, and something it's like building a ship in a bottle and sticking the pliers in your eye. It's something I do because I love to teach other people how to communicate these ideas. And communication has always been a centerpiece of my science programs and of my student training. And it always will be. So thank you to all of you for sending your thoughts and wishes. And thank you to everyone who's provided such patience and support. And I'll sign off here. And I'm going to put a lid on this. And let's not go there again on this podcast. Let's talk about the good things that biotechnology can do for all of us to help farmers and help consumers, help the environment, and help the needy. Because that's where we really got to put our focus, folks. Thank you so much for listening to me ramble for 47 minutes and 45 seconds.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. Please send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions TalkingBiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review on iTunes and recommend this podcast to a friend. More downloads and reviews raise the visibility of this podcast and help us reach a wider audience with science.